Hello, and welcome to Back Issue Spotlight on the Comic Book Page podcast. My name is John Mayer.
In this episode, we'll be having a spoiler-filled discussion about an older comic book storyline.
In this Back Issue Spotlight, I'm joined by James, and we're going to be discussing Morning Glories numbers 1 through 6 from Image Comics. Now, this is by writer Nick Spencer and Joe Esma, and this originally came out... When did this come out? I think, like, 2010.
Yeah, I looked it up online. It was 2010. And the reason why I looked it up online is because the writing style reminded me of a TV and comic series that came out earlier than this.
What did it remind you of?
It reminded me of both Why the Last Man and Lost.
Lost, I think, is definitely one of the touchstones for this thing.
Yeah, so, and Why the Last Man kind of was... he wrote Lost, some of the seasons... And so he left everything on a cliffhanger. So when I was reading this, I was like, oh, I'm feeling that vibe here.
Spencer was a writer on Lost?
No. Oh. Why the Last Man? What's his name?
Brian K. Vaughan.
Brian K. Vaughan, yeah.
Oh, interesting. I haven't read Why the Last Man yet. That's why you've talked to doing it in a month and a half or so. We're going to do the first five issues of that. So it'll...
Yeah.
I've got, like, all five of the hardcovers. So I've got the whole series. I've just never read them. So we'll get to that when we get to that.
Yeah, I think you'll enjoy it.
I hope so. But yeah, comparing this to Lost, I think, is a great example because this is what I would probably, if I had to sum it up as a high-level concept, describe this as a mysterious story in which the mystery is the story in terms of what the hell's going on here.
Yeah, very much so. Because you're kind of thrown into this situation, and if we go by Lost, you know, you see these people washed up on a beach, plane is down, and everyone's trying to figure out what happened.
Mm-hmm.
Why are we here? And the same thing, we're kind of thrown into this, okay, here's kids in school, and chaos is breaking loose in some scenes, and then, you know, you get these ghostly figures, you get these machines that are whirling in the air, and you're like, just question yourself, what is going on? I don't know what's going on. But he doesn't have to hook you to make you want to learn maybe what's going on.
Well, I think the challenge with these kinds of stories where it's craziness and unusual things happen, if they don't really give you a reason to stick around, either, wow, that's really intriguing, I'm curious, you know, like a time travel story maybe, or those are cool aliens or something, or characters where I want to see what happens to that character next. I've had a couple of these where they're so busy being vague and mysterious that there's nothing for me to latch on to go to those next issues.
Very much so, and I know exactly what you're talking about. And when it's done right, it compels the reader or the viewer, if it's a TV series, I want more. You almost hunger for I need to see the next thing.
Exactly.
I need to see the next thing. Or I need to read the next thing. And if it's done wrong, it's a turnoff. And this one, it started off, I was like, what's going on? What's going on? And then I got the hook, which was the cliffhanger. And I noticed the issues kind of followed that scheme going through.
Oh, yeah. I think you've got to end these things on a cliffhanger, or more likely, a reveal.
A reveal. Something that's going to make you so curious. You'll be like, wow, I didn't see that coming. Or I need to know what happens here. And you immediately flip the page. Because I was reading in a compendium.
Well, and some of these is a matter of making you, when you hit that end, rethink what you'd been reading in that issue.
Exactly. And which can be good. It kind of makes you want to go back and re-look at things. It can be bad because I'm limited with time and going back and rereading is not the best use of my time. But it's a good sign, actually, overall, I think. When you read it and you're like, oh, now you can see it in a completely different light.
Oh, absolutely, because I had read the entire 50 issues this thing came out with. I think the plan was for it to go to 100. Now, whether we'll get another 50 or not, I don't know. But this is the first time I'd reread the first six, knowing where it got.
So he was supposed to do 100 issues, and that would make sense because my compendium ended at issue 37, and then I had to pick up the last three trade paperbacks because I guess it ended prematurely, or maybe he just left and is coming back. I just don't know.
I think their plan was to do it a la Lost, where they would go so far, consider that a season, and then take a little break, come back, and then they took a little longer break and kind of, you know, didn't come back after issue 50.
Oh, okay. All right. Cool. Now, you know, you said one of the things in these types of stories is compelling characters. Now, mm-hmm. These are kids. Like, basically, did you look at them as high school age kids?
Absolutely, yeah.
Okay, that's the way I looked at them. I'm like, I didn't know if we were supposed to be looking at them as freshmen in college, but no, because they were living with their parents. I saw them as high school kids.
I think they flat out said they were on their 16th birthday.
Oh, there you go. So, yeah, high school kids. What did you think of the characters and what did you think of the art style in this?
I love the art style. I think Joe Esma, and I may be mispronouncing his last name, in which case I apologize. I think he's a fantastic artist.
Me too. My first exposure to him, because I had bought this stuff, but I hadn't read it, The Morning Glories, is he did some art with Archie, like covers and things, and I thought he was an amazing artist there, so I was happy to see his art here. It's great. And how about the characters? You know, now that they're fleshing them out, you have this ensemble cast, I guess, of six main characters. What do you think?
I think that they have very distinct personalities, which helps.
Yeah.
Some of them are more likable than others by design.
Yep.
Some of them are much more movers and shakers in the story. I mean, Casey is, she's the lead character, I think, in these six issues.
Yeah, Casey's the focal point. I mean, we see a lot of Casey, you see a lot of, well, I mean, I guess Jade being kind of off, you know, like a focal point, but we don't really see her. But I would say Casey, Hunter, and Ike.
Ike, yeah, definitely Ike.
And Ike's probably a very interesting character. And, you know, he's kind of like that ambiguity around his morality, you know.
Does he have any?
Exactly. I'm like, he plays both sides of the fence, and he is just going to be interesting to read. I'm not saying I like him, but he'll be very interesting to read in the story.
Yeah, again, he's the kind of character that almost you love to hate.
Yeah, yeah, that's exactly who he is.
Now, the first issue was around, I don't know, what, 40, 44 pages or something like that?
Yeah, it was an oversized issue. It took me a while to read. I was like, I hope they're not all this long.
Well, I think it needed the extra space in the first issue.
I agree, because although it was a getting the band together, giving us a little bit of background on each one of them, and it's six main characters, but then also building in some mystery in there.
Building in some mystery, showing us that this world has a lot of bizarre stuff going on.
Yep.
And, I mean, just when we first get to see these characters, we spend a page or two in their life before they're heading off to the Morning Glories Academy.
Yep. You know,
and then we get a page of one of them in the limo, and then another page where we kind of see the others in the limo and stuff like that. They need to go a little slow for some of that for us to get to know these characters before we see how they react to the world they get stuck in at the Academy.
I agree. Yeah. Because they're all going to act different based on who we saw them as, you know, at their households before they came to the Academy. So it was really kind of cool how that played out. And I really like the characters here because, like you said, they're diverse. And because of the diversity of, you know, who they are and how they react to situations and, you know, where they are, morals and life and things, I think it's going to be really interesting because you can put different characters together and completely take a different track on a different, you know, thing that plays out. And I just find them very interesting.
Well, and we learn a lot about these characters as the series progresses over those 50 issues. And, you know, there's a lot of things being kind of set up here at the beginning that pay off later and just give it room to kind of maneuver. And we get some other students later and other things happen, of course. But also that opening bit where we've got the one student, didn't you get in trouble yesterday and have to clean the blackboard? And she's like, well, yes, I did, you know, and that kind of doesn't bode well for the teacher.
Yeah.
And it's like, yeah, this school, things get out of hand.
Completely out of hand.
You know, it was funny, but dangerous, but it's one of those things that they needed to start the issue off with a bang and start to show the sorts of things that can happen. So when you get the craziness that happens to that other student and stuff, it's part of the premise at this point. Not if we'd just been spending a day and it was seeming like a normal academy for you know, wannabe Ivy League students or whatever, and then by the time we're thinking it's a regular world, craziness happens, that could feel off.
Completely, it could feel off. And it would take a different track completely, and I probably wouldn't have enjoyed it as much. With what he's done, Spencer, what he's done and the way he's fleshed out the characters, and he does have there's a lot of words in the book, and he does that with Spider-Man too. He gives you his money for Nick Spencer anytime he's writing. I think he fleshes them out so much that I feel like I really know these characters, and it's only been six issues.
Yeah, yeah. Well, because they're put into situations where their personalities really have to show up.
Exactly. Yep.
And there was a couple of things that we see early on, like that spinning top sort of deal. That's a real thing in this issue. That comes back. It has ramifications. It takes a while to figure out what the hell is it and why should we care?
Yeah, because I saw it. I'm like, what is this? I don't know. And I see a ghostly projection. And Are they connected? Yeah.
Well, and it's a very tricky thing to set up something like that and have people think, that's cool and I want to know more, versus that's vague, that's confusing, that's lame, I don't want to know more.
And I did want to know more. When I saw that, I'm like, what is this? And then when I saw it later on in this first trade paperback, I realized it's going to be a central point to the story, a central focal point.
Mm-hmm.
So, and there, you know, me, my mind just jumping because I haven't read past the first trade. I know you've read the whole thing. I'm thinking, okay, is this some type of morphing in and out of realities? Is this a time travel thing? Because there seems like there's some time jumps in here. So it just has my mind going this way and that way. Which way is it going to go?
And I will tell you that while I read all 50, it's been a number of years since that last issue came out.
Oh, okay, so you don't really remember.
I don't remember all the ins and outs, but some crazy stuff happens.
Oh, okay, cool.
You know, and we get some of that in this issue where, you know, not only do we get the what the hell happened to that one kid, and there were one or two places where, yeah, starting to get a little gross or whatever, but then we also have, I think it was near the end of the first issue, where they're going downstairs.
Yes.
And that staircase.
I was like, what is that?
It's this huge spiral with no railing, which in and of itself would worry me. It's like it's around the edge of like a huge missile silo or something.
Yeah, I was looking at that trying to figure out what in the heck is this? It looks very dangerous because I'm afraid of heights as it is, and it's huge. It looks like it's 100 feet tall.
Oh, easily. And the one thing about this place is it's got the wildest architecture.
It really does.
And when we get to the bottom and we get kind of that last page reveal,
yeah,
like, well, I didn't know what to expect, but damn, it sure as hell wasn't that.
Yeah, and then the creepy grin on her face, I was just like, what is going on here? So yeah, I kind of was like, okay, I need to know what's going on. Because mm-hmm. there's this hook, but I'm like, okay, what's the reveal? And then I flipped it, and it kind of took a jog a different way, but at the same time, it did address it later on.
Yeah, it did, and there was some, you know, they expect a character to react one way and it reacts another way kind of problems and stuff. Because there's an aspect where the faculty in this academy and the students are very much at cross purposes.
Oh, okay.
Because the students, they have this crazy thing about just wanting to survive.
Yeah.
And the faculty, they've handpicked these students for unknown reasons at the beginning and have certain expectations. And in some cases, they're pushing these kids towards and past that breaking point to see if they have whatever they need out of them.
Exactly. It's kind of weird. You see these kids are always under surveillance and you're seeing put in situations where, like you said, it gets abusive. It gets deadly at points. You can see mind games being played and mm-hmm. it's just craziness that you're like, okay, there was one scene in here that reminded me of, I'm trying to think of the name of the movie, Mark Millar, is it The Secret Service?
Kingsman,
okay.
you know that's based on a comic, right?
Yeah, based okay. on a comic, yeah. And what's funny is I saw the movie and then I bought the comic and read the comic. So I didn't know one was Secret Service, one was Kingsman, or I can't remember.
It was Kingsman, the Secret Service, and then I forget what the other one is, and then there's the King's Man, which is, I think, yet to come out, and it's kind of the setup for
that's
that
what it is. Yeah, I remember there was, but that scene with the water in there, that I was like, wow, I remember seeing that, but this is completely different. It's not the same scene, but seeing that, it just, you know, tickles that memory there. I'm like, wow, that's kind of cool how that played out. And how the kids react is completely different because they're not, they're in being observed. They may be in training, but they're not being in training to be a Secret Service agent for, you know, the English government.
Mm-hmm. In this case, these kids think they're in detention.
Yeah.
And when they realize the room is watertight and filling up.
Yeah.
You know, that's not good.
That's not good at all. And the reactions were just kind of funny. Well, when I say funny, you see someone get whacked in the head. They're just letting it go, knowing how deadly this is. But I'm trying to remember, who was it who went to the bottom there and held onto the pole? I'm trying to remember.
Was that Judy?
I think it was Judy. We'll go with that. But anyways, that was kind of the most interesting and literally like pushing people away. But I liked how that played out.
Mm-hmm.
It's just really cool.
Well, what was interesting with that scene is they would cut back to why a lot of these kids got into this detention.
Yeah, exactly. So it was really cool because we see them go into detention, why they're into detention, what they're doing. and actually how sadistic the teachers are in forcing to get what they want, you know, the reaction from the students.
Oh, yeah. Now, what I also thought was funny is the two guys, they got into detention because when they go downstairs, presumably into the basement or whatever, they come across what looks like some kind of bizarre ritual sacrifice or ritual of some sort.
Yeah, that was crazy. I was like, what's going on here?
I mean, you got the torches in the wall, kind of, you know, the robes, the whole nine yards.
Yeah, they look like Satanists almost.
And I'm like, this is a bizarre basement. Not as bizarre as the stairway we saw in the first issue, but it's like, again, this place has some crazy architectural details.
Crazy architectural details and craziness going on, and it once again leaves you wondering, almost like, we'll go back to Lost, when you see the polar bear come running out, you're like, why is there a polar bear on this island? Why is this weird cult here together chanting in Latin? We don't know what's going on.
The smoke monster, all of those things. A lot were set up very early on, so you've got that what is going on here question.
Yeah, so I had that same feeling as I was reading this. It was really good.
Mm-hmm. No, I think they did a fantastic job with that. The third issue, we get that prison scene set in 1490, and there's the, well, what the hell's going on with that?
Yeah, that's what I was wondering. It's like, man, we have this big jump back in time where they're basically speaking in Spanish, mm-hmm. and you see the craziness going on there. And actually, that one person, everything's written in English on that one side, she's a lethal lady.
Yeah, yeah. There's some intricate stuff going on here.
Yeah.
And I'm not going to say it all pays off, but as I recall, that they continued to move the ball forward. Because one of the problems I have with Lost is there were times where sometimes it didn't even feel like you got an answer. It's like, okay, like the first three episodes of the second season, it felt like we were covering the same hour and a half just from three different points of view.
Yeah.
And it's like, can we please move forward past that point in the story? And eventually we do. But then there are other seasons where you get an answer to this that leads to the next question that leads to an answer to the next question, and it feels like you're making forward progress. And it's tricky to do that without feeling like you're on a treadmill.
Yes, exactly. You have this hunger and desire. You want to see the story progress. You don't want to make it overly challenging, but you don't want to hand it to the reader or the viewer. Mm-hmm. You don't want to just make it easy. You want to leave it challenging and leave this semblance of, oh, I figured something out, or, oh, that's what this meant. So you almost have this weird, you got to play with the intelligence of the audience.
Well, yeah, and you've got to ration out the information so it feels like there's a steady flow to it.
Yep.
And do it to where it feels like it is going somewhere.
Yep. And when you get there, it's rewarding.
Yes. And there is an aspect of this where, yeah, they are playing for time.
Yeah.
Because they don't want to give us, you know, in the first few issues, here's all the answers. No, we need to work for it. We need to earn it, and the characters need to earn it. But if it feels like it's a never-ending series of cliffhangers, that gets old fast.
Yeah, that can be frustrating. And actually, Brian K. Vaughan, I think he only was a screenwriter on, like, two or three of the seasons of Lost.
Mm-hmm.
And so he wasn't there the whole time, but this, like I said, if you like this, I think you'll like Y when we get to it.
Cool.
But I mean, I really like that character, which I don't know the bald girl's name who speaks Spanish. I don't remember, but I liked seeing how she played out. She is a lethal character. I want to know about her. I liked how she even wrote out the stuff that she saw in the room, which means she memorized it. And I just want to know more about her just from seeing that little bit.
Now, you didn't mention one of the things about her, which is where she's found.
Oh, okay, yeah.
And that seems to be in an underground prison / maybe insane asylum?
It looks like an insane asylum to me. It looks like padded rooms.
Yeah, but the outside, it looks like, again, a prison kind of a thing.
Yep.
And again, this is just another one of the sub-basements of the academy.
It makes you wonder, how big is this place and what is going on here?
One thing I do not recall ever seeing for this series, and I would love to, is a detailed map.
That would be really cool.
Where is this versus the spinning top versus that spiral staircase versus the ritual room and then the school above it?
Because this place is actually massive.
Yes.
And there's a lot there.
And it seems to be literally out in the middle of nowhere.
Yeah, and they don't let the kids know where they're going. So every one of the kids, except for one, and I think it was, I can't even remember.
Zoe.
She was all hyped up.
But even she fell asleep in the limo.
At the very, yeah. But most, they all kind of passed out. I don't know if they sedated them with a gas or whatever.
I took it as they did, yeah.
Yeah, so they all fell asleep, and they were taken out to this remote area. And when they get there, kids, you know, of course, get on their phones. One of the big things, there's no cell phone signals there.
Mm-hmm.
So they either have some type of jamming device, which is what I assume, or they're way out in the middle of nowhere, which is also a possibility where there's no cell signal.
They could literally be anywhere on the planet.
Yeah, we just have no clue.
And because most importantly, the students have no clue.
Yeah, because they could have flown them to Antarctica for all we know, because they were passed out who knows how long.
Given the weather we see outside, that's unlikely, but it could be, you know, anywhere that, and we haven't seen a lot of the weather, but it seems to be okayish out this time of year.
Yeah, that's true.
But, you know, hey, maybe there's this whole Truman Dome kind of a thing from the Truman Story kind of a deal. You never know.
Could be. It's completely a controlled environment.
Yeah.
Did you like the romance aspect that they had in there between Casey and Hunter?
Not really.
Okay, I was like, that's probably going to surface again, the bumping of heads, and then they kind of keep on.
I thought that particular scene was funny, but almost because it was kind of, again, she's describing it as this is how every romantic comedy kind of starts.
Yeah, I thought that was funny.
I thought that was funny, but then afterwards, the kind of awkwardness between them and stuff like that, that's not why I was reading the book.
Yeah, exactly.
Again, when Casey asks for help from him, he always gives it. Yep, sure, whatever.
Yeah.
It's like, that seems like a bad move in this reality.
Yeah. And now the character we didn't get a lot of, we did get some of him, is Jung. Mm-hmm. I guess that's his name. I want to see more of him because he seems kind of like that character, like that bald Spanish lady who I don't know her name, but he seems like he's a tough guy to mess with.
Yes, and we definitely see more of him.
Yeah.
And that he's one of the other focal characters that at this point doesn't get a whole lot of screen time.
That's the thing. Yeah, right now they're just kind of like, they show that he can fight, but beyond that, we don't get a ton of him in this book yet.
Out of the six, he's kind of on the periphery of it, but there's also an aspect where in one of these issues, we get a reveal on him.
Yeah. Yeah, so I figure we'll be seeing more of him in the future.
Yeah, definitely we will see more of him. It's one of those things where these kids go on the offensive fairly early in the story. By like issue four, it's like, none of this. We're going to try to get the hell out of here and going to try to control our own destiny.
Exactly. We're not going to be guinea pigs. We're going to, like you said, be offensive here and go after the teachers almost, try and get out and actually save one of their classmates who's been missing. And that was Jade.
Mm-hmm.
Yeah, she's been missing. They don't know what's going on with her, so they're trying to find her, free her. And so there's four of them that get together. That's Hunter, Ike, Casey, and Zoe.
And Casey's the ringleader on all of that.
Exactly. She sets it all up. She really wants to get Jade free.
And, you know, it's good to do, and we get some interesting stuff with Jade a little later in these issues. And I did like how part of their plan was, oh, we're going to make this tear gas kind of a thing.
Yeah.
And the whole reason for that is Casey knew one of these other kids was going to sell her out. Didn't know who, didn't care why.
Yeah.
But it set up the tear gas aspect as part of the plan. So not only would the faculty come in, they'd come in wearing gas masks.
Yep, exactly.
And that was actually a key part of her plan.
Yep, which I thought was really cool.
Oh, yeah. It shows a cleverness to the writing and stuff and the way the characters are. They're not stupid kids.
They have very high IQs. They probably thought they were accepted to the school because they were exceptionally intelligent. Even Ike, you know, as horrible of a person as he is, he's manipulative because he's very smart.
Mm-hmm.
Yeah, so they're all very intelligent. But I liked how she actually outthought Ike in this instance.
Oh yeah, oh yeah,
that was really cool.
And how Ike was kind of on the outs with this group, although I believe he plays a major part, you know, throughout the whole story. And it was issue, I think, two that I think ended on a bit of a reveal for June.
Yeah.
And there's a lot more that happens with that later. And again, they've got this plan for this epic story. They can dole the stuff out slowly. Let's tease this. We may come back to it next issue. We may come back to it a couple issues from now.
Exactly. Now, one thing, did you read this in singles or did you read it in trades once?
Individual issues as it came out.
Did it read better as a trade or as the individuals? I don't know if you remember.
This is one of those that it reads well but differently in both ways.
That's what I would think when I'm reading this, because I'm reading it and I'm thinking, okay, there's this anticipation build up, and when you get the next issue you almost want to go back and see what happened 1 month ago to refresh and freshen up and go into this arc or go into this next chapter. But here, reading it back to back, it read very well, but I think it would have been a completely different feel.
In addition to Lost, the other series I would compare the writing, but not the plot and the story to, is Babylon 5.
Oh, okay. Yeah, yeah.
Because Babylon 5 would often have one of these things where at the end there'd be a reveal or there'd be something in an episode that made you rethink, wait, if that's the case, what about the stuff I saw last week or the week before or, you know, season before?
Exactly, yeah.
So the constantly reassessing the information you have and what's going on in the story. And there's an aspect where having it serialized helps because you can absorb one of those installments, be it an episode or an issue, chew on it and have something to speculate and think about before that next one comes out.
Yep.
But there's also the advantage when you read it all back to back of you can hold it all in your brain easier because you've had less time to forget it.
Yeah, I think you miss when you spread it out, you miss the nuances in the story, the little reveals that you would have forgotten about later on, like that thing that happened with Jung on issue 2, maybe 4 months from now when it starts spilling into a story, I don't really remember that well.
It's one of those things that when you get it serialized out, you've got the information fall off of memory and forgetfulness, but you've got the advantage of time to process it. Whereas when you're reading it all at once, you've got less time to have forgotten it, although it can still be overwhelming because so much happens over the course of like 6 issues. But you also haven't had the time to really process it, think about it, and figure, well, wait, you know, when we end this issue on this, well, what does that mean? What could be going on?
Exactly. Yeah, this was I know exactly what you mean by that, because there was so much that happened in these first 6 issues and what I was reading that I wouldn't say it's overwhelming, but it can be overwhelming. I had to break it off. I read 2 issues, the issues 1 and 2. I put it down, came back to it the next day, read 2 more issues, put it down and read 2 more issues, because If I would have just raced through and said, boom, 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 I'm reading all 6 of these, it's a ton going on. It's almost overwhelming.
I did it more or less in 1 sitting, I think.
Oh, okay.
But I also was not taking many notes. Literally, my notes for issue 4 is the students go on the offensive. And a ton more happened in that issue than.
Yeah.
But I was intentionally not taking those kinds of detailed notes for a couple of reasons. This is one where there is absolutely that depth of story, that depth of character, that depth of plot, intricacy, etc., that you could definitely get lost in the minutiae and speculate to, you know, you're blue in the face as to, well, what is that, you know, ritual scene about? What is the top, you know, what's going on and stuff? And there is actually a website, Multiversity Comics, that did a series of articles, the Morning Glory Academy Study Hall, where they would basically have 2 guys doing a back and forth or whatever on each issue.
Oh, wow. That's really cool.
So, I mean, and this is one of the few titles I can think of where that level of analysis and speculation is worthwhile to do.
Because there's a lot going on, and even though I read this through and it was recently, there's probably little things I missed.
Absolutely.
And I realize this is a title where you're missing things, even though you don't know you're missing things. And so listening to someone who really goes through the fine tooth comb and analyzes it, I think it can make the story so much more, give it more depth and more color on the palette, you know?
When Babylon 5 was coming out, I was doing a lot of traveling on business and stuff. And one of the hotels I was staying at in Research Triangle Park, North Carolina, I picked almost explicitly because, one, it was a decent hotel, but two, it had a VCR in the room.
Ah.
So my sister could be recording shows for me, and I could pick up a cassette, you know, one of the videotapes, take it with me on my next business trip, and catch up on stuff.
Oh, that's really cool.
Now, the other thing I discovered at that point was The Lurker's Guide to Babylon 5.
Ah.
Where they were doing this same sort of, hey, here's some backstory that's shown. Did you catch this comment? Here's what J. Michael Straczynski, the writer of like 90 out of the 110 episodes, 92 out of the 110 episodes, the showrunner, the guy behind the show, here's what he said online about this episode.
Oh, so you were able to just get so much more depth with it and really understand what was going on, the minute, you know, the intricate minutiae that's going on, everything.
You watch the episode, you take out of it, you read this, oh, I did miss that. That's interesting. That makes me rethink this. What about, you know?
That's really cool. I like that. And they did the same type of thing with this.
Absolutely. I don't remember to what level, but I did kind of skim those things, and they've got it for, I think, most, if not all, of the issues.
That is really cool. And this is this the thing that basically Nick Spencer, his breakout title, I'm assuming?
I would say it was one of his breakout titles. I think he's had a few others that really put him on certain parts of the map. I think The Superior Foes of Spider-Man really was one of his early works at Marvel, I believe.
I really love that, too.
But this, on the non-Marvel DC side, definitely was one of his hallmarks.
Yeah. This was... It impressed me because, you know, when I first... We were going to read this. I picked up my big compendium, and I kind of flipped through the pages. I'm like, okay, kids, you know, in school. And I'm just like, it looks like a spy thing. All right. I'm just thinking it's probably not going to be something that's in my wheelhouse.
Mm-hmm.
So I started reading. I'm like, wow, this is not what I expected, and this is so much better than what I thought it would be. So that was an impressive thing. Although, you know, it's not my favorite comic, I really, really enjoyed it.
I would agree with that assessment. It's not my favorite, but it's got a lot of depth, and it's really well done in many respects.
Exactly.
I mean, if you look at issue 5, we start with some scenes with this Mr. Gribbs guy, one of the teachers, or part of the faculty at least, and he's talking to this unseen person.
Yeah.
Every time we cut back, he's still talking, and you never hear from the other person. You don't know who it is. Up until the end where we get that reveal.
Yep.
And I think a couple of times they did that later in the series where you don't get the reveal in the same issue.
Oh, okay. So you have no clue who he's talking to until you had to wait a month or so.
Or in some cases, many months, and they circle back and, oh yeah, this part you've been wondering about, we're finally going to tell you.
Ah, all right, cool.
So it's something that if you pay attention and do a bit more of an active reading than just kind of, yeah, whatever, you know, zip through it and stuff, if you give it some thought, it's got some depth to it, and it pays off.
Yeah. In that scene with Mr. Griggs, at that point, I was like, they are not messing around.
No.
And that was very intense. I was like, wow.
Take that away from the end of the first issue?
Oh, I did.
Okay. Casey certainly did.
Yeah, that was like really intense. And then I loved it. Right after that scene, you see Casey leave the room and go up to Ike. Mm-hmm. And that was awesome the way that played out. Here, let me give you a little kiss.
Well, and also in issue 6, we've got these scenes and there's this redhead in the scene.
Yeah.
We never see her face up until the last page reveal.
Yep. That's true.
You know, we also got the second mention of Jonathan Bell's theorem. I don't know if it's a real thing or not, but it's a key thing in the story. And we start to see that there's a bigger tapestry that this story is being told on than just this school year at this academy.
Yeah, it's a huge tapestry. There's a lot going on. There's a lot of mystery. It invokes Lost, even though it's not Lost. It's a completely different story.
It's of that ilk, though, that sort of story.
Of that ilk, yeah. And it deals with these high school age students being put into a very difficult situation, but at the same time being very intelligent. And who's going to come out on top? And that's what I'm thinking at this point. What's the mystery and who's going to come out on top? Because it's almost like the students versus the faculty at this point. Mm-hmm. So I found this title just brilliant as far as making you want to come back and read more. And at the same time, I feel like I need to finish this. So what's happened is, like, we've reviewed Love and Capes, you know, recently. We reviewed, I'm trying to think of the other trade paperbacks we reviewed that have sitting out there.
We did Red Team, and prior to that, we had done Doomsday Clock.
Doomsday Clock, yeah. Okay, but Love and Capes, I have those trades stacked up back out there. But Morning Glories, I'm going to read before Love and Capes, because Love and Capes is very accessible, and I can forget it for a little while, and it'll be okay. This one, if I don't pick it up and start reading again, I don't want to put it down for 6 months and then try and remember when I'm going back to trade number 2 what's going on.
Absolutely. This is one that if you can binge it, you should.
Yeah, so immediately this has moved to the top of my reading list, and I'm going to be reading this whole thing and just enjoying it.
Now, what I would probably recommend mm-hmm. is you may want to even think about rereading the first 6 issues.
Okay.
But after reading each one, go hit Multiversity Comics.
Okay.
And go read that study hall page for it.
All right. I'm going to go there right now.
And again, I haven't read those articles and stuff. I'm aware of them. And at some points, I think they were even included in the later issues.
Oh, okay.
So the writers were aware this was going on. And there's some stuff that, you know, they may have theories that are totally wrong. They may have ones that they're guessing on and are right. But it's the kind of story where following along somebody else's speculation as you go, can add a layer of enjoyment if you're into that kind of thing.
Well, interesting. While you were saying that, I literally went to the website. I typed it into Google, so I'm there and I'm bookmarking it. Mm-hmm. So I will be reading it as I go.
Because for me, this is, again, that lost style of story where anything can and sometimes does happen. It legitimately, I think, makes the reader ask, what will happen? What is happening? You know, what the hell's really going on in this place?
Exactly.
You can't just assume, well, you know, it's just a prep school for Ivy League students or whatever, so nothing crazy is going to go on here. No. We've seen, again, rituals. We've seen an underground prison or sane asylum or something. This crazy spinning top, so some kind of almost sci-fi weirdness may be going on.
And a crazy reveal at the end of the last issue that we read, which I'm like, wow. Is this a time aspect going on here?
Mm-hmm.
So there's so many things that are going on here that you just want to consume it. So, I mean, it's rare that a comic does that, but us reviewing this, I'm like, I have to finish reading it now.
Yeah, and like I said, I can only think of a handful of other titles that I think have the narrative depth to really be worth doing that kind of deep look at. Obviously, Doomsday Clock, I think, was one of those. There was a lot going on in there. I would say Astro City, there's a lot that you could just kind of discover and uncover about that city, that world, because it's really well fleshed out, very artfully so in terms of both really the art and the story. Beyond that, I'd have to give it some thought as to what else I think has that level of depth that you could really kind of uncover those other layers and try to get the payoff for having spent the time to figure out what's going to happen next.
Exactly. Yeah. There's not many. One I will tell you that I do know of is another book that we will be reviewing. Mm-hmm. Yeah, I think if you like that, you're going to like Why the Last Man.
Cool.
And what's funny is, he, like I said, screenwriter on Lost.
Mm-hmm.
And then what happened with Why is it came out in 2003. So you see stuff that happened when he was writing that going on in The Walking Dead. You see it here in Morning Glory. So it's kind of cool how they kind of play off each other and how you see, oh, that's where they picked up doing this and that and the other thing. I'm not saying they copied it, but maybe they were inspired by it.
Well, yeah, I think these writers are not working in a vacuum.
Yeah, they read and they see and they understand.
And if not, they should be.
Yeah, I would hope so.
You know, there have been times where we get two stories that are very similar happening almost concurrently in the DC universe, and it's like, okay, they didn't have time to read it, but man, they're not even talking. Worse, the editors didn't catch that kind of stuff.
Exactly, yeah.
So yeah, tons of material to speculate about. It has some hidden layers to it. It had a trajectory, so they're not just winging it trying to stay a step ahead of you.
Yeah.
So definitely fun stuff.
It's really fun, and I like where it's going. I think I know where it's going, some of it. And if you guys are in for a page turner, this is probably going to be a book that you would want to read. And I'm happy that we reviewed this because it's been sitting in my stack of stuff to read. And I think when we were talking about things to review, I mentioned this. And you're like, ooh, let's do that. And I'm glad we did because it's rare that I'm like, I got to read this now.
Yeah, same here. I'm glad we did. It's one that has been something I've considered rereading. It's just a matter of finding the time. And I'm glad I reread the first six.
Yeah. So if I was grading this, depending on the issues, I mean, I know we don't grade the back issues, but, you know, these things go from B+ to A- and A's in here. So, I mean, but it's really good stuff. And I checked on Comic Book Roundup. It seemed like overall, most of the issues and overall the entire series, people really liked it.
Yeah, it was well thought of at the time. I think it maybe had some delays near the end of it. Maybe, I don't remember. But it was well received, well thought of. And the only thing that for me, because I don't remember what if I'd been grading it, I don't know that I was doing the grading of everything that far back. But the thing that would have knocked it down a little here and there was there's just so damn much stuff going on, it was hard to keep track of.
Yeah, I can see that. It's like, that's why I was like, I read this and I'm like, I have to continue reading it because I'm going to be completely lost if I put this down for 4 or 5 months and then try and go back to it. I won't know what's going on. I'll have to start from the beginning. I'm not saying, and I might go back to the beginning just because of the multiversity thing. It'll be nice to go through it and really know what's going on.
Well, and again, I'm not going to say that they're going to uncover everything or whatever, but I know for me, reading through The Lurker's Guide to Babylon 5 as I was watching the show, which I've actually started redoing. Apparently, it's airing on Comet, which is one of the things that YouTube TV pull stuff from. So all five seasons of Babylon 5 are there.
Cool.
So I've been watching the first handful or whatever, and then when I'm done with an episode, let's go reread the Lurker's Guide. Because, again, sometimes there's just that one nugget of the story. Ooh, I didn't catch the relevance of that. Or, you know, maybe his theory's wrong. I don't believe it because. But it gives you that ability to speculate and chew on a story versus, you know, just get that initial taste as it goes down, and that's all there is to it.
Yeah, and I'm sorry to get sidetracked. It's ADD mind, but I literally opened up one of the things, and I was just checking on it. There are really detailed notes. They'll be like, oh, here's a nugget. Here's some things. It's like people going back and forth just talking about little things that you may have missed. It's mm-hmm. It's great, and it's a pretty long write-up for each issue.
I'll be honest. One of the things I've considered doing lately, but have realized I'm probably way too lazy to do it myself, or do it solo at least, would be to put together a website along the lines of something like a Lurker's Guide to Babylon 5. In other words, here's all the stuff in a story, and do it around Astro City.
Oh, that'd be awesome.
But what I would want to do is spend a little time up front designing kind of the database and the website for it such that you can basically click on which issues you've read, and it would only give you information about the issues based on other issues you've already read.
Which would be really cool. It wouldn't spoil anything for you and give you exactly what you need to know for what you read.
Exactly.
Which would be super cool. And speaking of that, that makes me kind of sad because I know he was revisited with those quarterly trades, but I think it just went into hiatus for who knows how long.
Which is a shame. I think Astro City is some great stuff.
Yeah.
Did a back issue spotlight on the first six issues ages ago. I want to reread them and go back through it because it's a really rich narrative world. And
it really is.
Stuff like that, like Morning Glories and a couple others, they don't come around that often.
They don't. They're few and far between. And it seems like most people are doing that decompressed narrative right now. And the decompressed narrative is fine. It's a writing style today, but it doesn't give you that depth of the story that you need. And this is giving you so much information. It almost feels like it's compressed compared to everything else I'm reading.
Mm-hmm.
Like it's been so much information pressed in here, but at the same time, it's not overwhelming because of that. It's more, it just feels so different.
Well, I don't think that a series like this has filler issues.
It doesn't.
It may have intermission or interlude type issues where, hey, we're going to pause the main story and go tell you some backstory on stuff to give you some insight into this character and then get back to where we were. But sometimes you need that.
Yeah, catch your breath a little bit and maybe get some depth for the character or make you care a little bit more for maybe something that's coming down the road that you don't know.
Yeah.
So, very cool stuff.
Mm-hmm. So, what'd you read the last 2 weeks?
I read it actually quite a bit. The last 2 weeks, one thing that stood out to me was A Man Among Ye. I really kind of enjoyed it. It was a pirate comic,
mm-hmm.
and we haven't had one of those in a long time, and I really enjoyed that.
I did like A Man Among Ye. I'm not really into the pirate stuff, but it was a fun title.
It was. It reminded me a little bit of, there's a series from Stars called Black Flags.
Ah, yeah, yeah.
They deal with the same characters in there, so it just
gave me
that feeling.
I have not watched it, but I think my sister was a fan of it.
Yeah, Birthright, I really enjoyed. The reason why, it was kind of dragging there for a while in the middle, but it's starting to wrap up finally. So it feels like everything's into it's going high pace right now. High speed, you know, quick pace, and a lot of action. This one issue, it was like a lot of like splash pages. The entire issue was splash pages. So that was kind of weird, but it's getting near the end, so I was happy. But that brings me to my next one, which I wanted to ask you what you thought of it. Dark Knight's Metal.
You know, I'm glad you asked about that because this is an event that, you know, I got mixed feelings on it. It's everything I kind of don't want in a DC event.
Okay.
And it's like, it's an event to keep up with continuity problems, you know, did Doomsday Clock happen? Did it not? What's going on with that and stuff? And it's putting all this window dressing of what I would call awesome coolness in kind of almost the most, almost sarcastic way.
Yeah.
And I don't want or need a dystopic DC universe.
Yes.
I didn't initially pre-order the rest of the series. And when I had originally written my notes a week or two back, my comment was, and I probably won't. I'll be honest, I've since reversed that decision.
Oh, so you're going to buy it?
I'm going to keep going with it because, honestly, what came out in the DC Connect for the one-shots they're doing?
Oh, yeah.
I'm curious about.
Oh, okay. All right. So you need to read it then, too.
It's not that I need to, but this may be my swan song of a DC event.
Oh, okay, gotcha.
I'm not saying it will be. I'm just saying I'm not as happy with DC, both from a business point of view. I think they've done some really unfortunate stuff over the last few months and even beyond that. And I really don't like this post-apocalyptic world or whatever they're doing. That's not what I want out of DC.
That's interesting you say that. One thing, I know some people like The Batman Who Laughs. I hated it just because of the black text boxes with the red ink. It still drives me nuts.
Oh, God, like, that was just so hard to read from a visual level.
And they keep doing it. I'm like, I'm not getting any younger. Please stop doing this. But it seems like, for me, I like Snyder for these wacky, zany ideas, but it seems like that's all that he does now. And what I mean by that is not just his DC stuff. So he had the wacky idea, you know, Dark Knight's Metal, or the wacky idea in Justice League when he's coming out with it, or this or that. But now it's even kind of into the indie world. When you go to Undiscovered Country, it's gotten really wacky and zany with craziness that's going on there. And so it seems like he keeps trying to top himself with the crazy ideas. And I think that's kind of like a losing proposition for him, because I know he can be a good writer. I know he has great ideas, but he doesn't need to be crazy just to be crazy. And I feel like that's the path he's going down right now.
I agree with that. And anytime a story is kind of described to me as, man, it is so out there, it's just crazy beyond belief, that's not a selling point for me.
Yeah. And I'm seeing it in pretty much everything he's writing now, because, like I said, the Justice League, it got crazy there for a while. And then now Undiscovered Country over Image, it's getting really kind of that zany wild. I feel like, okay, we got time jumps in here. We have Mad Max going on.
Mm-hmm.
It's just kind of nutty, and it keeps getting more and more crazy. And I'm just like, okay, Scott Snyder, I think he feels like he has to live up to a level. And that's not necessarily where you want to see. You don't want to pigeonhole yourself into that. That's what I do.
To me, it's shock and awe storytelling.
Yeah, exactly.
It's so overblown, so crazy, so wild, so imaginative that, you know, they're trying to get by on the pizzazz versus the substance.
Exactly. And it's something I don't enjoy that much. Now, one other thing. Did you have any other comments about Dark Knight's Metal or 2 or whatever it's called?
Dark Knight's Death Metal or whatever. Not crazy about the name. Not crazy about the tone. Not crazy about the main series. I'm curious about, again, some of those side things with the multiverse and some stuff like that. And I am expecting it will change the DC universe in some way, shape, or form. Hopefully into a state that I like.
Yeah.
If it does not, well, we'll see what happens.
Yeah, hopefully. Now, the other thing that came out, which was kind of weird, it's not really the event, but it was like an Avengers Empire Zero. Did you read that?
I did.
What did you think of that? Because this is like, I guess, a building up to the event.
I thought it was a decent setup for the event, but I think the premise of the event just feels a little odd to me.
Me too at this point.
it's like a bizarre sequel or twist on the Kree-Skrull War, but
yeah,
it's the Kree-Skrull peace.
Which, I was super excited, because I'm like, I love the Kree-Skrull War. Mm-hmm. I like whenever that creeps up in the Marvel Universe. I like that type of stuff. But here it is, the peace, and now I see what they're building towards, I think. And I'm just like, I felt a little underwhelmed, but I'm hoping the event will be better. So I don't think it was a horrible comic. It's just, I felt like I lost a little bit of my excitement for the event.
Yeah, I thought it was okay. There's like 52 or so parts to this thing, which is way too many in general, and certainly way too many during a pandemic.
Yeah, way too many parts.
And I'll be getting some, but not all of this event. I'm certainly not excited enough about it to say, oh, any crossover I'll get. You know, now granted, 2 years ago, I probably would have been there.
Yeah, I know what you mean. And speaking of which, we got another 80-page giant. So this is 2 weeks, I think, back-to-back, where we had 80-page giant. Or 100-page giant.
Yeah, this was the Green Lantern one. I know there was a question about that on the Slack channel, what people thought of the Joker one and this one. And we talked about the Joker last time around.
Yep.
For me, the Green Lantern one, it wasn't bad, but it certainly wasn't essential reading. And it felt like just a random assortment of just Green Lantern backup features.
Yeah, that's how I felt. What I'm starting to feel, and this is not directed at DC or Marvel, but I feel like the $10 books have been played out now. Marvel, you know, they did the Marvel 1000, the Marvel 1001.
Mm-hmm.
Now they're going to be doing a $10, I think, Spider-Man 850. And then DC's been doing the 80th anniversary. And I'm just like, if you give me a big book, like I think back to Spider-Man 800 was just the first one that came to mind. And it wasn't $10, but it was a, like, let's say $8 issue. And it's a one big massive story with maybe a little bit of celebratory stuff at the end. I'm cool with that because I want to read one big good story. I don't want to see 10 different creative teams do their 4-page blurb because I feel like...
Well, it's disjointed.
It's disjointed and I don't feel satisfied at the end. I feel like it's a grab bag, an anthology, literally,
mm-hmm.
where I'm going to like 3 or 4 of the 10 stories and I'm like, now I feel like I've been ripped off. Even though I haven't been ripped off because I'm getting a lot of material, I'm just starting to like, okay, I don't like these big books anymore. These big, you know, jam sessions that we're going to get together and throw the creative teams out there.
I think they can be done well. I don't think they are usually done well.
I would agree.
And when I was thinking about going into comic book publishing as I got out of college, and I was way too young, totally naive, and it would not have probably worked out well at all. But when I was thinking about doing that, when I was a wee lad coming out of college back in, you know, 92 or whatever, one of the things I wanted to do was kind of tell my great epic comic book saga, because of course, you know, I'd never written anything, so why not start with a great big epic saga? And the idea was to do it as monthly 80-page comics.
Oh, okay.
So you would get essentially the equivalent worth of content of 4, you know, 20-page issues once a month under one cover. So, hey, save a little money there. But it wouldn't be chapter, chapter, chapter. It would be kind of story with intertwined sort of things in it, if you know.
Oh, yeah.
Kind of the 52, the weekly series style of storytelling.
Okay, that makes sense.
You know, follow one character for a bit, then it goes off to another, it comes back, and this is the window into the world. But it would have a cohesive timeline and vision versus these 100-page giants we're getting. There's really no clue when some of these stories are taking place, if they're in continuity or do they matter and stuff like that. You know, and there's no connective material between most of those stories in there.
Yeah, that's what I'm starting to feel. They're just going out and they're hiring or some talent or a mercenary, you know, if you will. Hey, we're going to put you two together. Give me 8 pages or something. And I feel like that's all the thought that goes into it. Make it really cool.
Well, I've got 100 pages to fill as an editor. I've wanted to work with these people. I'll sample a few of them. Hey, this guy's never had time for a full issue, but he can squeeze in a script for an 8-page thing, or he can draw it or ink it or whatever.
Yeah, and that's exactly what I feel like is happening right now. And I'm just like, and at that point, when I am trying to cut back on some of the fluff, you know, that my reading, mm-hmm. I'm like, I don't need to read that because it doesn't matter at that point. Like, it doesn't matter in the continuity of what I'm reading in Batman or in Superman or whatever, or Green Lantern, you know?
Well, and back when I was getting a lot of stuff and felt the need to cut back a particular order, because it was, I used to have like, you know, if it's over 500, it's not that that's a problem, but I need to take a closer look. So over 600, okay, now I could afford it, but I need to take a closer look sort of a thing. Now, you know, hey, there's not much coming out, so not a big deal. But what I would do at those points is I would basically filter my order form, be it from DCBS back in the day or Cowabunga now, by price.
Yeah.
If I want to cut the price down and there's a $10 book, how badly do I want that book? Do I get the hardcover? Do I get the trade paperback? Do I skip them?
Exactly, yeah. And I think back, you know, even we reviewed the Action Comics 1000, which I think was one of those big anthology $10 books, and the Detective, I can't remember, or
it was,
I can't.
Detective 1000, because they're about to do Detective 1027 of 1000 issues of Batman.
Yeah, and I can remember a story or two. Mm-hmm. And that's kind of it. And so I'm like, okay, if I remember a story or two, and that had no impact on the continuity at all, it's just because I thought they were kind of cool. At that point, I'm like, I could have skipped it, you know? Because, yeah, I'd rather read Morning Glories personally. Something with some payoff, or I'd rather read, I'll pick maybe Batman now because Tom King's not writing it anymore, or maybe I want to dip my toes back into Aquaman because I recently dropped it, instead of going for that big $10 book. That's just something I would enjoy more.
Yeah, for me, it's a matter of where do I get the most enjoyment from?
Yeah.
And I get different types of enjoyment out of different types of stories. For something like Morning Glories, it's the intricate plot and the what's going on. Whereas if I was getting that level of man, I got to really work for it out of a Batman title, I might not be so crazy about it.
Yeah, very true. Yeah, I know exactly what you mean there. Because I felt like I was having to do that with Green Lantern there for a while. I'm like, what is going on here? But not in a good way.
Yeah.
With Grant Morrison, I was like, what is this?
But I'll be honest, there are a couple of things I got the last week or two where, you know, I really could have, and in hindsight, if I had it to do over, probably would have skipped.
Yeah, I'm actually the same way, because some of the stuff in my shipment that I'm getting is stuff that I had already cut, but it's kind of filtering out. like Aquaman 60, I got it. This is the last Aquaman that I have.
Okay.
So I had cut that. And it wasn't that it was bad. It was just like, it wasn't great. And so I was like, okay, I can do without this book. But there's a lot of stuff in here that, you know, some of them, I can't even say the title on that one because it has a bad word.
I hate it when they do that.
Yeah.
And I know people think I am just horribly offended by profanity and stuff. No, it's iTunes doesn't want profanity in it. And I like this being an all-ages podcast. So thank you for respecting that.
Oh, you're welcome. But there's some stuff in here that I got. Like Lolo Woods, I kind of saw it out to the end. I kind of wish I wouldn't have got that one. That was one of those horror books from Joe Bill.
Yeah.
I'm just like, that was probably one that wasn't that great. Mercy from Mirka Andolfo, it was good, but now I can't remember what was going on, so it's kind of lost my interest.
I have found there have been some stories that now that we're getting an issue after the pandemic, where the hell did it leave off again?
That's what I'm starting to feel, and that's not a good place to be in because there's nothing there to catch you up. I don't want to really want to go back and read it. So at that point, I just kind of like, I'm not going to read this anymore.
Well, and this sort of thing is what I was expecting with the lack of story momentum over the pandemic and the lack of accessibility in most comics.
Yeah, it's really showing right now which comics are accessible, which ones are not, and which ones stuck in my mind from 2 or 3 months ago and which ones I don't remember who the character even is.
Yeah.
My highlight of the last 2 weeks, believe it or not, was Thor by Donny Cates. I'm really enjoying his take on Thor. I still love Jason Aaron's Thor the most. It was my favorite run of Thor ever. But issue number 5 came out, and I'm just really digging that book. I think it's really cool.
Now, I want to thank, and I forget who it was that posted just the last, maybe even today, as we record this on Thursday, July 2nd, on the Slack channel, the art upcoming in Wonder Woman.
Oh, what did they post?
They post a couple of samples. I forget who it was and what it was. Damn it, I forget the artist. It was Michael Janin on Wonder Woman.
Oh, that's right. That's right. Okay, now that you say it, I remember that now.
And I apologize for forgetting who posted it, but I do want to thank them. And the reason I want to thank them is the note I had under the last issue of Wonder Woman I read, not this week, but last.
Mm-hmm.
Not loving the title. If it doesn't improve, I might drop it.
Oh.
I had forgotten Michael Janin was getting on. That guy is an outstanding artist.
And that makes me want to dip my toes back in because I had dropped Wonder Woman because I wasn't enjoying it.
I just hope they get a new writer.
That's the key. It was the writing I wasn't enjoying.
Well, and it's funny because I didn't really enjoy the current Justice League arc that just finished because, one, it was bizarrely Wonder Woman focused and in a bad way. And
yes.
It's not that it was a bad arc. It was not a good arc for me. Because I try never to say that a comic is bad because for a couple of reasons. One, somebody will come out and say, you know what? I love this comic because of this, that, or the other.
Yeah.
And you know what? Awesome. It may not work for me. That's fine. Different people, different tastes.
One thing that was kind of interesting for me, because you mentioned Justice League, so I want to bring this up. Okay, so we went from, who was originally writing it? We just talked about him a little while back. I can't remember. Who
it wasn't Venditti. Sure. No, it was...
Venditti was writing it now. Before it was the guy who wrote Dark Knight's Metal.
Oh, Snyder.
Snyder was writing it, and then it went to Venditti, and now the last solicit or two, I think it was Steve Orlando.
Mm-hmm.
And they took Venditti off, and I was just like, this is just a personal thing. I don't like Steve Orlando. I don't like much of what he writes, so I literally dropped it until Steve Orlando's gone, and then I'll go back.
I know there are people that do that, such as yourself, a few others, and I don't fault you for that. If you know the writer's just not on your wavelength, don't get it. But for me, I at least tend to give them a chance because sometimes I get surprised if, you know, I didn't like their work on other stuff, but man, they really clicked with this title. Other times, I really like their work, but man, they're not clicking on this title.
Yeah, and every now and then, you know, I probably should give him a chance, and Eric probably could give me a copy just to see what it's like. It's just I've been jaded by his work in the past.
Oh, and I'm not trying to suggest you do that. I'm just saying that I've seen a couple of writers that, you know, I think the New 52 at times had this where, man, on paper, this looked like a great creative team, right character, right take, right time, and it just didn't work. Or other times, it's like, you know what? I looked at that and said, you know, I'm going to try it. What the hell?
Yeah.
But I don't think it's going to be any good. And I was totally wrong.
Yeah. And actually, believe it or not, Nick Spencer, I have not been liking his Spider-Man that much. It's not that it's bad. It's some issues are good.
Mm-hmm.
It's just it's a lot of reading when I get to it, which he gives you your money's worth. But at the times I'm like, all right, this is going to take a while to read this. But I got the Morning Glories. I don't know if this is going to be for me. And I read it and I loved it. So you can't judge a book by its cover.
No. And you can't always judge an author by their past work because sometimes
correct
they had editorial guidance that was bad or didn't have it and they needed it or whatever, or they're just really passionate about a book and it clicks for you in a way the other stuff doesn't.
Exactly. So, hey, let me know how it's going, because if it's good, I'll get back on it.
Okay. One of the other ones I want to mention is Resistance number 2.
Oh, that was good.
I liked that a lot more than I liked that first issue. And I think, and I said it at the time, when we read that first issue, it was just kind of bad timing.
Oh, it was horrible the way it started. And thank God it went, took a little bit of a left turn there.
Yeah. So I'm curious what they're doing with your other books over at Artists, Writers, and Artisans. Don't know that I pre-ordered any of the other ones, but I might have. I don't remember.
I will tell you what. I think Mike Myers talked about it on the Slack channel, and I have pre-bought all of their books. Year Zero I'm looking at right now. I have liked each one of them. They're all different. Probably the one I like the least is called Red Border, but all the other ones I really like.
Okay.
Yeah, I think they're really good. And for you, Avoid Hotel.
Yeah, that one was pretty obvious. It looked horror like a horror stories. Book.
Yeah, they don't really run into each other. They're more like, this is a one-book story, or one-issue story.
Well, it's funny, and this is around the time of year it usually kicks in. I've been going to Comic-Con for decades. I've had a press badge there for eons. So I'm on a lot of press lists.
Okay.
Comics, movies, stuff like that. Anytime something drops into my email box on, you know, hey, would you like a screener for this horror movie?
You're like, no, thank you.
I do what I think is the polite thing to do, and hopefully nobody's listening to this and would be offended. I just delete the email. I certainly, you know, hey, if they're doing a great horror film, I absolutely don't want to watch it.
Exactly.
The better it is, the worse it's for me. You know, that's just how I am, and that's nothing on them. I'm not the right venue for that. I'm not the right audience for that.
Exactly.
You know, it's just funny.
Cool. But, I mean, you know, it was, there's some decent comics, looking at what I got, I'm happy, but there's some stuff there that I'm just like, I think it's the spacing, with it being so spaced out in the pandemic, you know, just getting back into it, it's hard, and I don't really remember. And I don't want to put forth the effort to remember. And then other things, it's just like, maybe I shouldn't have gotten this, but I think I already cut some of these, and they're just petering out at this point.
Yeah, I'm taking a little bit closer look at what I'm getting and stuff. I'm not making drastic cuts, because I'd already kind of done that. And there are a number of things that it's just, hey, it's played out now, so it's done, it's over. Or they've gone digital only, or they're just not releasing it, or whatever.
Yeah.
So I'm getting, a dozen or so comics a week, and I'm cool with that.
Hey, now this, I guess it was yesterday, July 1st, the shipment, was that Wednesday?
That was Wednesday.
Okay, I guess there was no Marvel in DC, but after July 1st, is everything kind of back to normal, or Marvel, DC, and others?
My understanding is Marvel is going to go back to doing comics every week. They've been doing comics one week, trades the next for the most part.
Okay.
DC's been releasing stuff every week, so I think we're getting back, I don't say totally to normal, but I think we're ramping back up.
Yeah.
But I, just before recording it, actually opened up my shipment for that week, and only got like 5 things.
Oh, I shouldn't laugh, but it's because there's no Marvel and no DC, and you don't get a ton of indie.
I did have one question that maybe you or somebody else can help on, although by the time I may have read them by then. I got the Free Comic Book Day Firepower and the Firepower Volume 1 Prelude trade paperback.
Me too.
I don't know which order to read them in.
Me neither. Now, I'm thinking that we read the trade paperback because it's the prelude to the story. And I think the Free Comic Book Day is the first issue of the series that's going to be launching. So I think you read the trade paperback first and then the Free Comic Book Day. That's what I think, but I could be wrong.
I don't remember when their original ship dates were, and I should have checked that.
Yeah, I have no clue.
I may look up when they were supposed to ship, and if the trade came out before Free Comic Book Day was scheduled, I'll go with that. If Free Comic Book Day came out first, I'll go with the Free Comic Book Day.
Hey, let me know if you find out.
So many decisions. It's so crazy.
Exactly.
But it's funny because we had asked for feedback on the whole weekly comic spotlight, back issue spotlight thing when we first cut over to this as to, you know, if and when should we switch back to the weekly comic spotlight, and really did not get any overwhelming, oh, go back to the weekly comic spotlight feedback, which is to say we didn't get any of that.
Yeah, none.
Which is fine and stuff, and certainly during the pandemic with no new comics coming out, I wasn't expecting that. But it wasn't until this Monday when Mike Myers mentioned he was kind of missing the weekly comic spotlight.
Yeah.
And I'm like, yeah, we kind of parked that, went to the back issue spotlight. It's easier to plan further ahead. It's you know, easier to schedule and whatnot. And, you know, what the two of us had talked about last time we recorded 2 weeks ago, was almost sort of splitting the difference. We're going to be starting up the monthly comic spotlight soon. And what it's going to be is starting with the shipment I've got sitting in my hands here for July 1st. We're going to talk about all the July books. And you guessed it, a monthly comic spotlight.
Yeah.
Now that episode will come out early to mid-August, because that last shipment is July 29th. We'd get it around, I don't know, 30th, 31st. We need a little time to read it, so we'd record it the next week. It may go up the next. But the idea is one Monday a month would be a monthly comic spotlight, and we would talk about the comics we got in the last month.
Yep.
That's not to say we would talk about every comic we got in the last month. But
that
just
would
like,
take forever.
Exactly. Just like when we went through the last 2 weeks, hey, what were the highlights for you? What'd you like? What'd you not like? Or whatever. And we'll basically do it kind of in the same structure that the Weekly Comic Spotlight had of, you know, Marvel, DC, and other would be the categories. Again, what did we like? What did we not like? What are we looking forward to? And just, we're not going to really review any specific issues. We may talk about some in more in depth than others. But man, if you guys have questions or suggestions for the format of this, or for any specific episode, like, you know, hey, this came out in July, talk about it when you get to the monthly comic spotlight. Let us know. We'll try to take notes on that, and we'll try to include it in the discussion.
Yeah, because feedback is key as we're developing this, because if people aren't liking something, we can always switch it up.
Mm-hmm.
And if people are, you know, think of something cool that we didn't think of, that'd be really helpful, because we always want to make things better, you know?
Because,
more enjoyable.
Well, yeah, and it was funny because Mike was saying, oh, I miss you guys talking about the new comics. And I'm like, well, James and I have been doing it at the end of these back issue spotlights every other week for a while now.
Yeah, because he said he had been skipping the back issue spotlights. I was like, oh, you've been missing this stuff.
Yeah, and I get it. So that's part of why we're going to be taking the content like we just had about the last 2 weeks, pulling it out of these back issue spotlights, dropping it into a monthly comic spotlight so it gets a little more time, a little more focus and stuff like that, and it's a little easier for you guys to follow.
Yeah. And I'm going to send a message to Mike on the Slack right now to let him know to listen to this episode at the end when we talk, so he can listen, hear about the new comics. And hopefully he gives us some feedback on what he thinks for the new monthly spotlight.
Yeah, yeah, absolutely. Now, one of the other things I do want to put out there is I had heard from TKO recently.
Oh, really? Okay.
And they reach out and offered a 20% off discount code for our listeners. They can use it to purchase any of the TKO stuff over on tkopresents.com.
Oh.
The discount code is comicpage20. It's all one word, all caps. I don't know if that matters. And the number 20 at the end. I'll put that in the show notes, complete with the URLs. You can go straight to that discount and such. And I think they've got some interesting stuff. We've reviewed the first two rounds of their things. And it's funny, they'd even offered, you know, some of the trades and stuff. And I'm like, hey, we've read your stuff. We've liked some of it. Not all of it was for me, but, you know, you're doing good stuff. And honestly, I appreciate the fact that not all of their books are ones that I love.
Yeah.
Because they're hitting genres that I don't care for, but other people might. And I think that's important to have happen in the comic industry.
Oh, definitely. If they're doing a good horror book, there's lots of people who are going to like it, even though you don't love it.
Exactly. Exactly. I personally liked Sentient. I've picked up Sarah and the Banks.
Those are all good.
Yeah. So they're doing some quality stuff. Sarah was Garth Ennis, and who's the artist on that?
I have it over here. You're making me go in to get it. I'm going over here.
Yeah, sorry, I don't have it handy.
Garth Ennis and Steve Epting.
Steve Epting, that's right.
I have the stack of them right here. I just happened to have it, and I didn't even know you were going to be talking about TKO tonight.
Yeah, they do some great stuff. So when they offered a 20% discount code for the listeners, I'm like, well, sure, I'll share that.
Yeah, that was one of my favorites, and Sentient was the other favorite from the second wave with Jeff Lemire and Gabriel Walta.
Now, the other reason I wanted to point out TKO and recommend you guys take advantage of this offer if you're looking for stuff to read is, one, they've got stuff to read. Two, this is one of the publishers early out of the gate during the pandemic decided to support the retailers.
Yeah.
They basically said, you know what, we're direct to readers and stuff, but during this time, we will take half of what we make on this. If you tell us who your comic store is, we'll send them that half.
That's amazing that they did that, and they didn't have to do anything, but they gave back to stores, even though they kind of bypassed the direct market. They wanted to help.
Exactly.
And that's impressive. I take my hat off to them.
They're looking at that bigger picture. They want the comic industry to do well. They want the comic readers to do well. They certainly want the stores out there. If they can partner with the stores and get their books in there, great. But the fact that they basically basically said, you know what, we know these retail stores are hurting right now, and this is a way we can help. I think we should try to support TKO for showing the level of support they did to the industry at a time when they absolutely were under no obligation. I think it speaks to their character.
Yeah, I've bought all of their trades, and that made me want to buy all of their future trades and recommend their stuff to everyone,
mm-hmm.
because it's really stand up of them to do it. You know, they did something they didn't have to do to help out people that I know were hurting, and you know, hats off to them. They deserve a round of applause, and everyone should support them.
Yeah, I think they're trying to do stuff the right way, and I like the fact that you're never going to get stuck with an incomplete story, because when they release it, they release the whole thing at once. You get all six issues, or the trade, whichever, or the hardcover, whichever format you
want. Yep, and it's good stuff, really good stuff.
So definitely go check that out. The other thing to announce is that the preview spotlight 153 for the August previews, the deadline for that is going to be Saturday morning, August 8th of 2020, so bright and early that morning and stuff. Hopefully, we'll see a lot of cool stuff, because at this point, we should be seeing a lot more new solicits and things of that sort. As we are talking now, we've still got another day and a half-ish or so before I've got to put together the previous Spotlight 152. I've already got, I think, an hour and 7 minutes worth of clips. So I'm happy with that. So I've got to actually, you know, record my clips. Got to figure out what I'm going to pick. So good turnout this time. I know it takes a little while to get back into the swing of things. And I had certainly noticed in this previews, in Marvel previews in particular, how everything seemed to be listed for the most part. Oh, it's an order code from 4 months ago.
Yeah, I noticed that too. I was like, that's hilarious.
Okay. Yeah, I think I even pointed that out when I was I've been doing on the Slack channel, and I've put them up on the website too, although I haven't put them into the menu structure yet, I don't think. When I'm getting my new comics, like when I got the package today, I'm doing a really short, you know, 2 to 5 minute video, just doing an unboxing of here's what I got this week.
Yeah, I really like that. I think it's kind of cool. And I think Eric even commented that he liked the black tablecloth he used. It's really nice.
It's actually a foam board.
Oh, that's what it is.
I do it sitting here at my desk. I just pop the, because I've got a corner desk with a recessed keyboard tray. I just pop the keyboard tray up so it's a flat surface. Put the foam board there. Put the thing on top just so there's nothing distracting and crap under.
Oh, nice. I've got like overhead, it looks professional.
Got an overhead camera set up. That took a little while to get going. Once I did that, it's like, I want to play with this. So I've been doing that since the shipment started after the pandemic.
Hey, it's better than me just laying stuff on my floor and taking a snapshot with my phone.
Something.
Yeah.
So I'm playing around with some video editing and stuff like that, and doing a, you know, short 2 to 5 minute kind of a thing. It's not too hardcore to do. So we got the preview spotlight coming up. I also want to give a shout out to the recommendation roundtable. Send in your picks of whatever comics, novels, TV shows, movies, video games, board games, whatever that you think people might enjoy. We're still in many cases, I know I'm under still kind of that stay at home order. It's going to go for another month or two at least. And more on that in just a second. So help people find stuff they might enjoy, either that they can order or get on one of these streaming services or order on Amazon or something like that. I just figure there's lots of ways for people to spend their time beyond just reading comics, and we can help each other out do that.
Definitely.
There are no deadlines on those. Basically, when I get enough clips, I'll release another episode. I've released 3 so far, and I think I've got a few clips for a 4th, but not enough to actually do the 4th.
Oh, okay. Well, I'm actually planning on doing some clips, believe it or not, on video games, so hopefully you send those in this weekend.
Awesome. I think that's great. And it's going to be one of those things. If we get clips on a recurring enough basis, I'll keep it going. If I realize it's gone a month or two and I've been mentioning it every, you know, Monday episode and no takers, maybe I'll just say, okay, I'll take the clips I've got. I'll talk for enough time to fill out an episode and call it an end to those. I'd hate to do that, because I think there's a lot of stuff on the streaming services people might like and stuff like that if they just know about it.
Yeah. For sure.
So, yeah. The other thing I wanted to mention, again, I mentioned the stay-at-home order and stuff like that with, you know, this whole pandemic thing that's been going on. I don't know how it is where everybody else is.
I'm in Florida. We're number one for cases. I'm just, the new outbreaks. It's horrible here.
We were number one for positivity rate for testing.
Yeah. Yeah. You guys are number one, and then we just passed you, I think, for the one-day record. So Florida and Texas are going back and forth.
Yeah. Yeah. I'm willing to lose this competition. You can have it all. Thank you.
I don't want to win.
I've been putting together an Excel spreadsheet where I track the cumulative cases, the number of new cases, and then I've been doing a 7-day, 14-day, 21-day, and 28-day average, and then a running average. And I have been seeing that average over the month of June, where it was at 61 for a 7-day average of number of new cases a day on June 1st to 458.6 new cases a day on average as of July 1st.
Wow.
Instead of being at the 40, 50, 60, you know, ooh, 88's a big day, this past week, we had a weekend that had more new cases than any calendar week prior to it had.
It seems like it's getting worse and worse.
It's absolutely getting worse and worse.
And what's weird is it seems like over half the people around here in Florida where I am don't take it serious, and it's kind of sad.
I don't think people are taking it serious here. There's finally been an order from our governor. If you're in public, you've got to wear a mask. If you're in an area where this is under control and you're doing good, awesome. Enjoy it. Don't take it for granted. If you're in an area that is still struggling getting this under control, be safe. Be responsible. Be respectful of other people, and do what you can. I mean, for me, I'm honestly barely leaving the house.
Yeah.
And part of that is I have some other health issues. My sister has health issues. My mom is not young. I like seeing them once in a while. We often, you know, I'll go bring food to them on a weekend or something like that. And if one of us gets, you know, COVID or whatever, it kind of curtails some of that.
Oh, yeah.
And it just, am I afraid, oh, I'm going to die if I get it? Yes and no. I mean, yeah, it's possible. No, I don't think it's highly likely. But if I don't get it, I'm pretty sure I'm not going to die of it.
Yeah, exactly. I don't want to risk it. And for me, I'm like you. I have parents with underlying issues, and I do. It kind of sucks because I want to hang out with them. I want to give my mom a hug, but I don't do that right now.
Mm-hmm.
I mean, we go see my parents. I stand outside. I wear a mask. We talk to them. I bring them stuff. One time we sat down, you know, kind of distanced at a table and, you know, ate something, but we were kind of far apart, like opposite areas. But it's weird, you know, I'm afraid of hurting them and not knowing I'm hurting them.
Yeah. Well, and that's my theory on this. When the numbers for yesterday were 597, mm-hmm. not an all-time high for us, but one of them, that means on Tuesday, there was mm-hmm. nearly 600 people that had it and were probably contagious and may not have known that.
Yeah. Walked around and spread it to who knows.
Yeah, depending on the time frame of the testing feedback and all that kind of a thing.
I honestly wish we would have a mask order from our governor right now, because right now it's countywide. So about half the counties have masks and half don't. So it's weird.
We got it from our governor today. And this is something that if it had been in place initially, and I get why they were saying, oh, maybe you don't need a mask initially, because they were afraid the healthcare workers wouldn't have it, and they absolutely need it.
Yeah.
But if we had shut down harder and tighter initially, we could be in the position, say, New Zealand is in, where they've got sports going again with full stadiums of people at the games.
Yeah.
You know, it's, I want us to get back to that place, into that reality, but it takes time to do that, and we need to get this pandemic under control.
Yeah.
So, you know, as I'm recording this, we're literally right before the 3-day 4th of July weekend. I hope as people are listening to this immediately after said weekend, that they have been responsible, they have been safe over that weekend, and have not put themselves or others at risk of spreading this kind of stuff further.
I agree. I hope everyone takes it serious and just take precautions at the bare minimum. Wear a mask around others.
Do what you can. Do both what you feel comfortable with, but also this is something that will protect you. It will protect other people. And I'm not trying to put the health above the economy. I'm certainly not going to put the economy above the health, but it's something to get both of those things rolling again.
Yeah.
We need to get past this, and we need to take it seriously.
I agree.
And of course, there's plenty of stuff to be doing at home in the meanwhile. There's tons of comics, there's stuff online. Hey, we've got these recommendation roundtables you could submit ideas to, and again, the preview spotlight. So tons of stuff.
Tons of stuff to do. We need more clips for the preview spotlight.
Absolutely. So anything else?
No, that does it for me.
Cool.
Join us next week as Sam and I start taking a look at the Squadron Supreme maxi series from the 1980s, and in 2 weeks when James and I talk about Contest of Champions 1-3 from Marvel from the early 80s. Now, if you've got ideas for what we should be doing for future back issue spotlights, please reach out to us and let us know. We are taking suggestions.
The show notes and forum for this podcast can be found at www.comicbookpage.com under the podcast and forum sections of the website. Please email us at theguys@comicbookpage.com and let us know what you think of what was discussed in this episode. Thanks for listening.